Bangun. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A new investigation by Reuters has revealed the U.S. military ran a secret anti-vaccination campaign at the height of the pandemic in the Philippines and other nations in an effort to sow doubt about COVID vaccines made by China. The clandestine Pentagon campaign began in 2020 under Donald Trump and continued into mid-2021 after President Biden took office. The Pentagon set up numerous fake social media accounts on multiple platforms to target audiences in the Philippines, Central Asia, and the Middle East. The campaign also aimed to discredit masks and test kits made in China. According to Reuters, the secret operation was launched to counter what it perceived as China's growing influence in the Philippines and other countries. One senior military officer involved in the campaign told Reuters, "We weren't looking at this from a public health perspective. We were looking at how we could drag China through the mud," they said. For more, we're joined by the reporter who broke the story. Joel Scheckman is an award-winning investigative journalist who's written for Reuters and The Wall Street Journal on national security, intelligence, and cyber espionage. His recent Reuters piece is headlined, "Pentagon Ran Secret Anti-Vax Campaign to Undermine China During the Pandemic." Joining us now from Washington, D.C. Joel, thanks so much for being with us. Lay out your major findings. I mean, this is just explosive, what you have discovered.
So basically what we found was that when COVID-19 broke out in January, February 2020, you know, obviously the entire world was not prepared for what was going to happen next. But in certain areas of the national security establishment in Washington, immediately they saw this through the kind of prism of this kind of new Cold War with China, right? And the issue is that had already been heating up. And there's this idea in Washington now that China and Russia have been just very successful with these kind of information operations, this kind of propaganda campaigns of the type that the U.S. used to also do a lot during the Cold War. But there's this idea that Russia and China had really gotten ahead of the United States in the years since the Cold War. And you know, in 2016, you have the hacking and leaking during the election to affect the outcome of the election. And there's this idea that China has really been like getting ahead in that sphere as well, in like influencing allies and spreading misinformation. And that's the backdrop to what happened in 2020, where, you know, COVID breaks out and immediately or within a few months of the outbreak, China starts spinning this narrative that not only was COVID not created in China, but that actually was brought to China by the United States military. Maybe it came out of Fort Detrick, or maybe it came through a military service member who was participating in a sports competition there. Then they start spreading that narrative, and from the Pentagon perspective, you know, there was just this like tremendous anger that this narrative was starting to take hold in other countries, like the Philippines and Southeast Asia, and so they felt that they had to strike back. And the other thing that was going on at that period was that even in the early days of the pandemic, the U.S. was starting to come up with a vaccine response, but one that was going to really put like America first. It was a very like America first vaccine policy. Whereas very, very early in the pandemic, China came out publicly and said that it was going to try to make its vaccines publicly available in the developing world, right? And all of this starts to play out in the Philippines, which is a country that traditionally was a very close U.S. ally, right? And traditionally, it's a very close U.S. ally, but had started to move away under President Duterte, had started to move away from the United States and started to move towards China anyway. And then the pandemic breaks out and, you know, Duterte cuts this deal with China that it's going to be the first in line for China's vaccine that's under development. And at the same time, Duterte says, okay, I'm going to also get rid of these old U.S. military agreements that we have. They're no longer relevant. And so within the Pentagon, within Washington, there was this fear that they were going to lose the Philippines, so to speak. And so they launched this secret propaganda campaign in the Philippines and elsewhere in Southeast Asia to try to denigrate China's vaccine. And what made it particularly what, you know, controversial, I think, or controversial now, right, to look back at it in hindsight, is that it's not that the U.S. was secretly, not just that the U.S. was secretly denigrating a vaccine at the height of the COVID pandemic, which by itself is kind of problematic, but it was doing this at a time that no other vaccine was going to be available in the foreseeable future, right? Like, the United States' vaccines did not become widely available in the Philippines for like 10 months, for 10 months after they got the Chinese one. So the Chinese one was really the only game in town in the Philippines for like almost the first year of, for almost an entire year. And so, you know, you have Sinovac, which is really the only one that most Filipinos were able to access. And the Pentagon was using these kind of secret social media accounts on Twitter and Facebook to say that this vaccine was harmful, that it was dangerous, that it was at least ineffective, and that, you know, China caused the virus to start with. So ergo, you know, how can you trust any vaccine that comes out of the country that that created the virus itself, right? And they were using these kind of fake accounts that sort of purported to be Filipinos and trying to really stir up this message that, you know, I mean, what's your track record with Chinese products, right? Like, they're all fake, right? You know, what have you seen in your own life? You've seen that Chinese products are fake. How can you trust a country that always creates fake products to make a real vaccine? The vaccines are going to be fake, too.
This is extremely significant, given how many people died in the Philippines of COVID without taking the vaccine. I mean, you have that quote in your piece. We weren't looking at this from a public health perspective. We were looking at how we could drag China through the mud, said one senior military officer. How many people died in the Philippines?
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember, like, by the end of COVID, how many people passed away. But it was, I mean, you're talking about a number that reached into, you know, that reached it far past the tens of thousands, right? And there's no question. It's very hard to measure, like, the efficacy of a secret campaign like this and say, okay, how much did it move the needle? But I think if we judged it by its intentions, right, like, the intention was to make people hesitant to take Sinovac, there's no question that to the degree that that was successful is incredibly harmful. There's all kinds of public health research in the Philippines that shows that vaccine hesitancy specifically towards the Chinese vaccines led to a large number of deaths because, again, that was the only vaccine that was available for, you know, from like February 2021 almost till early 2022. It wasn't the only one, but it was almost the only one, right? Like, it was the only one you could reliably get at that point in the country. And the fact that people were so afraid of taking that because of their history of sort of suspicion towards China really had, like, a very adverse impact. Now, it's hard to say exactly how much the Pentagon throwing fuel on that fire, like, how much of an impact that had. But if you judge it by its intentions, to whatever degree they were successful at their intentions, it was incredibly harmful.
You suggest toward the end of your piece, Joel, that there is a kind of broader move underway within the U.S. military to get more involved in clandestine propaganda to undermine adversaries like China and Russia. Both of these countries, of course, criticized by the U.S. precisely for deploying these methods. Can you explain?
Yeah. So, like I was mentioning earlier, there's this idea that the U.S. has been flat-footed in sort of responding to Chinese and Russian covert propaganda efforts. And there's this idea that, you know, we've been, like, a little bit too hesitant, a little too kind of moralistic in our response. And as a result, we've kind of, like, ceded this sort of information space battlefield to them. And there's this idea that we need to kind of fight fire with fire. The United States needs to take the fight back to the adversary in that realm. And it needs to envision, you know, psyops, as they call them, as having a much bigger role in sort of shifting you know, kind of shifting the political dynamic, right? That PSYOPs, their role is not just in a hot, like, war and dropping leaflets, encouraging surrender, but it really needs to be part of this kind of ideological battle and potentially be used to kind of undermine civil society within, like, you know, within the you know, within our adversaries.
Your piece concludes by noting that General Dynamics IT, which worked on the anti-vax campaign, just won a contract worth almost $500 million, half a billion dollars, to, quote, continue providing clandestine influence services for the military. Explain.
Yeah, so General Dynamics, there's a lot of different, like, aspects of these like psychological operations, right? Because it's not just online, but for the online part of it, General Dynamics was responsible for, you know, the largest Pentagon contract that was involved in this kind of anti-vaccine kind of COVID propaganda. They were the ones that were kind of running the accounts. Their subcontractors, I should say, were running the accounts, running the propaganda during that period, and they actually got into a lot of hot water. Not so much just because of like, you know, the kind of moral elements of this or the ethical elements that we're discussing, but more because they really got caught, right? Like the accounts were discovered by the social media companies. Like the tradecraft they used to disguise themselves was very poor, and so they got into a lot of trouble. And people in that world were like kind of shocked on that basis for why they would get like another contract so soon after to do the same thing, you know, when they were discovered, you know, kind of repeatedly and called out repeatedly, you know, just like a year ago or 2 years ago. So, you know, going forward, my understanding is that there could continue to be the prime or like the main contractor behind this kind of clandestine online kind of propaganda operations. These kind of
you're talking
online
about
PSYOPs,
setting up,
as they call them,
right? PSYOP, psychological operations. You're talking about setting up fake sites,
fake websites, fake accounts, you know, fake social media accounts like Twitter, sock puppets, if you will, to kind of amplify these propaganda lines in countries that the U.S. is in competition with.
Well, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Joel Shechtman, award-winning investigative reporter, has written for Reuters and The Wall Street Journal on national security, intelligence, and cyber espionage. We'll link to your Reuters piece. Now you're going to The Wall Street Journal. But to your Reuters piece, Pentagon ran secret anti-vax campaign to undermine China during pandemic. Next up, President Biden announces an executive action to streamline the path to citizenship for some 500,000 people married to American citizens but lack legal status. We'll speak with Delia Ramirez, the first Latina Congress member to represent Illinois, also married to a DACA recipient who will benefit under President Biden's new policy. They were at the White House for the announcement earlier this week. Stay with us. WC's Claire de Lune, Moonlight, performed by Claire Dominique Guillot and Jean-Michel Vallée. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. On Tuesday, President Biden announced an executive action that aims to ease the visa process for so-called Dreamers and streamline the path to citizenship for spouses who've lived in the United States for at least a decade.
Today, I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including Dreamers, who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, landed jobs in high-demand, high-skilled professions that we need to have grow, to see our economy grow. It's the right thing to do. Second action I'm announcing today is about keeping families together. My dad used to have an expression. He said, Joey, family's about the beginning, middle, and the end. About keeping couples together who are married, where one spouse is a U.S. citizen, the other is undocumented. They've been living in the United States for at least 10 years. These couples have been raising families, sending their kids to church and school, paying taxes, contributing to our country for 10 years or more. Matter of fact, the average time they've spent here is 23 years, the people we're affecting today. But living in the United States all this time with this fear and uncertainty, we can fix that. And that's what I'm going to do today. Fix it.
Meanwhile, Republicans say they plan to challenge Biden's executive order. This is Rosalena Sanchez, a DACA recipient who would be eligible for U.S. citizenship under Biden's new measures.
It's hard to believe that this already happened, but it did. And we're just super, super excited. My parents brought me when I was 11 years old. And then I went back to Mexico in 2009. I was already 19. And that's one of the reasons why my my adjustment of status was denied because of multiple entries. When I went back in 2009, I was there for just 2 weeks when this drug dealer started chasing me and harassing me. So that's the reason why I had to come back right away. I did it illegally through the border, so I was arrested. If Biden is not re-elect, it's really scary. Just to think about it, I get really scared because I don't know if then the new president will take everything away from us and I will end up in Mexico.
For more, we're joined by Democratic Congressmember Delia Ramirez of Illinois, where it's estimated 1 in 10 children in the state has an undocumented parent. Ramirez is the first Latina congressmember to ever represent Illinois. She's also married to a DACA recipient who'd benefit from this new Biden executive action. On Tuesday, she and her husband, Boris Hernandez, attended Biden's White House announcement. Congressmember, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you explain in detail what exactly President Biden has now put into effect and how it affects your own personal family?
Yeah. I mean, Amy, it's a personal, it's an announcement that hits personally, right? I'm married to my amazing husband, Boris, who came at the age of 14, who is DACA, and we've been going through this process for about 3 years to adjust status. But here's the reality. There's this assumption that if you marry a U.S. citizen, you automatically become a U.S. citizen or a green card holder in this country. Most people don't understand that in order for you to be able to get permanent status here, you have to actually apply through a marriage adjustment status that requires, if you enter this country unauthorized, like you just heard from the southern border, for you to pay a 10-year bar back in your home country. So what that means is that if someone is married to a U.S. citizen, as a family, they want to stay together, the current law requires them to go back to their country with absolutely no guarantee that they will be approved to re-enter the country. Anything can happen in that time. And in some cases, people are waiting 10, 11, 12 years back in Mexico, in Haiti, Ecuador, or wherever their home country is. In essence, separating families, and which is why there are over 500,000 individuals made up of these households who are still in the shadows. On Tuesday, that changes that. It means that no longer will you have to go back to your home country in order to be able to go through your adjustment status. You will be able to stay with your family here and raise your children and apply for your legal permanent residency, as well as a 3-year work permit. It's major. It literally means keeping families together in mixed status. It means that U.S. citizens like me who are married to non-citizens won't have to worry that at any given time, if they're in their DACA, that the program ends and they'll be undocumented completely, or if they're not DACA, that at any moment in the shadows, they could be deported.
I want to ask you about the timing of this, both right before the presidential election debate between Biden and Trump, but also right after President Biden just issued one of the most restrictive immigration policies ever declared under a recent Democratic administration. It shuts down the U.S.-Mexico border, denies asylum to most migrants who don't cross into the U.S. via ports of entry, and limits total asylum requests at the southern border to no more than 2,500 per day. Can you talk about what he's done now and what he did just a few weeks ago?
Yeah. I mean, Amy, let's be honest. Two executive orders that could not be more different from each other. One of them is restricting people's ability to seek asylum in this country, which I have publicly denounced and I continue to denounce. I said to Secretary Mayorkas, this does not change the fact that that EO must be repealed as soon as possible. And then one, which is the one he should have done 2 weeks ago, which is giving an opportunity for families to stay together, helping Dreamers, particularly those that were not eligible through the timeline to be able to get DACA to finally get a professional visa. Two different things. One is about what our administration is doing about the southern border and actually reacting to Republicans, who, which, by the way, I have said, it doesn't matter what you do on border, and it doesn't matter how terrible you are or how great you are in immigration, Republicans will continue to attack Democrats on immigration because this is the number one issue that they are convinced will allow them to win the White House. And so I continue to say, be the administration that shows the stark difference between Donald Trump and Joe Biden as it pertains to immigration. Tuesday was a good step in that direction. What he did 2.5 weeks ago was not. And so I think we need to be very, very clear. We have to continue to allow people to seek asylum. It's a human right in this country. Amy, I was in Panama. I saw the worst of the worst situations, women with children seeking asylum. Many of them have made it to our southern border, and they should be welcomed. We should provide resources. We should ensure that we're working with our neighbor countries to also extend protections. And people like me, or a woman who I just heard who is about to give birth to her child, who is undocumented, who has gone to school here, should be able to stay with her family. This system has been broken, Amy, since the 80s. And it's funny how Republicans continue to say, Biden is trying to extend through executive action amnesty. Last I checked, Reagan was Republican. And frankly, that's why my parents are U.S. citizens today.
Congressmember Delia Ramirez, you are also the co-sponsor of the American Families United Act. Can you explain what that would do?
Yeah. I mean, look, this is the comprehensive bill to be able to provide immigration reform. And that's actually, Amy, what we continue to work on. Tuesday was a great step forward. But, Amy, let's be honest, there's so many people left behind. I knew, and it was mixed emotions, when we were at the announcement that there are a number of family members who don't fit this category. Frankly, Boris was happy, but if you really asked him directly, he was still sad. Because for him, it extends protections, but for Wesley Hernandez, his brother who's DACA, married to a non-citizen, his status does not change. And the program ends tomorrow. He is left in limbo. My tío Chilano, he's still, after 34 years in this country, still left in the shadows. The bill, what it does, it actually provides expansive, comprehensive immigration reform, bringing the largest number of people into status. Many of them, most of them, unless they're children, contributing to this country, paying taxes. It will provide them a pathway to legal permanent residency, therefore citizenship, work permits. And that is honestly the thing that we should continue to work on. But Amy, you and I both know that the Congress that I am in, dehumanizes people that look like my husband, people like my tío Chilano, and we don't see Congress passing that bill this year. But we should be doing everything in our power to ensure that if we gain the majority, there's no BS excuses next time that we pass the bill.
I am also interested in races around the country right now as we cover the election. You tweeted with others like Texas Congress member Greg Kassar to encourage other members of the House Democratic Caucus to support Jamal Bowman here in New York, a massive multimedia, a multi-million dollar ad campaign has been launched against him, who is a two-term Congress member. Can you talk about your support for your colleague?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and let me start saying, I had a meeting with seniors, about 75 seniors earlier this week, and they were asking me how to protect Social Security. They were asking me, why are we not doing more about affordable housing? Why is healthcare so darn expensive? And my response was, because of the big money in politics. You have really good candidates and incumbents like Jamal Bowman, who have been doing the work around the clock, who fight like hell for his district and all people in this country to ensure that they have adequate, good quality education, housing, healthcare, who stand on the side of justice and want to see peace in Gaza and peace in New York, who apex of the world will come in, raise a crap ton of money, mostly from Republicans, and throw it in there as a game to try to unelect one of the most effective, most caring, most passionate members of Congress. And I'll tell you, to me, that is despicable that they could use that much money and that we as Congress and our Supreme Court would allow that. They are literally trying to purchase that election because he dared to stand for peace and justice, because he chose to say, I want food, I want peace, and not bombs. And because he is a man who always has stood on the side of the people, of the working class people, you have this man running against him, laughing when he is asked about how he's taking money from places like AIPAC. You have crypto getting involved. And so I really hope that New York voters are watching closely, that they're trying to buy this election, and then they're preparing themselves to try to buy more elections across the country. And certainly we know that they're trying to come also after Congresswoman Cori Bush. And we have to say, absolutely not. This seat is not for sale. Congress is not for sale. And enough of this trying to buy these elections.
Yes, Jamal Bowman is facing the most expensive primary race in U.S. history.
Imagine if that money went to housing and healthcare and education in that district instead of campaigns to smear him. Imagine if we use that money for helping working class people.
The primary here in New York is next Tuesday. That's June 25th. But early voting has already begun. Finally, Delia Ramirez, how open is the Biden administration to hearing your immigration advocacy? You also brought to SOTU, to the State of the Union address, Elvira Arellano, who was an immigrant who we interviewed when she was in sanctuary in a Chicago church to prevent her from being deported.
Yeah. Look, I talked to the president directly a couple of weeks ago, and I said to him, you get to choose what kind of president you want to be, the president that keeps families together or the president that separates them. You get to decide what kind of president you are. Are you the president that welcomes people seeking asylum because you understand your own immigrant experience of maybe 100 years ago, or are you going to be the one that restricts it? I'm going to tell you, in this place, it's all about seniority, but I'm not going to wait until I'm here three terms to fight like hell for communities that I care deeply about. I know that he heard me, particularly not on the asylum, but certainly on keeping families together, because I made it really personal.
This is about Boris Hernandez.
This is about Boris Hernandez, and he gets to choose what kind of president he wants to be if he wants to earn their vote in November.
Delia Ramirez, we thank you so much for being with us. First Latina congressmember to represent Illinois. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Kick off summer at the intersection of community, culture, and sport at the Concord Pacific Dragon Boat Festival. Experience the continent's best dragon boat racing, headliner music shows including acts Hey Ocean and Manila Gray, a cultural pavilion and demonstrations, local marketplace and food vendors, and all kinds of family-friendly activities. The festival takes place on June 22nd and June 23rd at False Creek and has free entry.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.